From Entrepreneur Media, this is Problem Solvers, a show in which entrepreneurs do what entrepreneurs do best, solve unexpected problems in their business.
We were completely wrong.
And I'm just like, it's not selling.
It was like, we have to start from scratch.
I'm Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine.
All right, here we go. I am now outside. I don't know that I've ever recorded this podcast outside. I'm not going to spend the whole time outside, but the reason I'm doing this, as I now walk around the neighborhood, maybe you can hear the sounds of birds or cars, or maybe you can't hear anything. I don't know how sensitive this mic is. But anyway, the point is, here's people driving by in a car and they're looking at me funny because I'm literally walking around holding a laptop and a microphone. And the reason for that is because I don't really have a good travel kit. Anyway, why am I doing this? Because this is the 200th episode of this podcast, which is insane. It might not actually say that on your podcast player of choice. If it's numbering, it might be a few off because we've released some sponsored episodes and whatever. And so anyway, but this is the 200th official episode. And if you've been listening to this podcast for some time, then you know that every 50 episodes, I try to pull back the curtain and have a meta conversation with you about how I make this show and how I make anything and just where we are in a moment. And this time I wanted to get outside. Well, because being outside represents a kind of change for me. And this show, if you've been listening long enough, also represents a kind of change for me because I've changed the way that I make this show and have learned quite a lot about the importance of always rethinking what it is that you're doing and the way that you're doing it, and discovering that there could be better ways to do things and that things that you think are important may not be, and things that you think people expect of you, they may not. It's something that I think we all have had to learn through this time, and I think that we are all better for it. So on this 200th episode of the show, I am going to talk to you, if you are interested in podcast making, about some things that I've learned recently about how to do podcasting better and more efficiently and not upset anybody, as I kind of worried that I would. But also, more broadly, I'm going to talk to you about an interesting change, a way that I thought I could never change, a way that I thought was just, ooh, there's a creepy bug. I wish I could put my microphone up to this bug. I don't know that I can. I'm just going to drag my microphone along it so that you can enjoy this. Ooh, it's so creepy. It's big. I've never seen anything like it. I'm like backing away. Do I kill it? Do I just wait for a bird to eat it? I don't know. I don't know what to do. Okay, anyway, this is a limitation of the medium, clearly. It's audio. You can't see that bug. Ugh. Anyway, the point is, there was something about me that I thought was unchangeable. And I learned that more changeable than I thought, which is interesting and clarifying. Anyway, it's the 200th episode of Problem Solvers. We're talking about change, making change, creating great things, and then changing the way that you create them. It is all coming up after the break. And I'm going to go back inside now. All right. After the break. Do you need to upgrade your business's Wi-Fi performance? Is your Wi-Fi slowing down when you work from home because you're sharing it with your family? Do you wish you had your own secure Wi-Fi network separate from the rest of the house? Netgear Business's Wi-Fi 6 products represent the latest in Wi-Fi technology. They deliver unmatched speed, coverage, security, and capacity for growing your business or working from home. They're also packed with features like the ability to create a separate network at home dedicated to your work. Plus, seamless management helps keep your guests and employees connected and your data protected, providing visibility from anywhere at any time. The world runs on Wi-Fi, and small businesses and home offices are no exception. With Netgear Business Solutions, you get the very best Wi-Fi performance to keep you connected whether you're in the office, working from home, or on the go. Visit netgear.com/business and use the code SOLVERS10 at checkout to save 10%. That is netgear.com/business with the code SOLVERS10 at checkout to save 10%. All right, we're back. It is the 200th episode of Problem Solvers, and we're talking about change, the change that you maybe didn't want, didn't think was going to be good, and turned out to be the thing that you need. And before I go all meta and talk about this podcast, I guess I'll just go part meta and talk about something that appeared on this podcast. I'm going to take it back as a starting point here for the idea of the change that you feared is the change that you need. Taking it back to episode 6? Is that possible? 6? I had it here. Yes, episode 6, September 4th, 2017. Episode 6, it was about this woman named Shira Burke, who created Goody Girl cookies. I'm sure you've seen them. I see them all the time. They're these great gluten-free cookies. And when Shira started this company, she went for like crazy new cookie ideas, like really unique things in the marketplace. And then her packaging was also really unique, just really stood out. And it was a problem because, well, people didn't seem to want all her uniqueness.
I wanted to be clever. I wanted to be ironic. I wanted to be fun. I wanted to be funny. I have a very sardonic kind of New York sense of humor. And I felt like I wanted that to come through, you know, in the packaging and in the names of the cookies. But people don't care about me. They care about the cookies.
By the way, if you recognize that voice, it may be because you've been listening to this show since 2017, but it also might be because she shows up in the intro to the show. Every episode, you know, starts off with that little intro music, and you hear the clips of three people, and she's one of them. So we've been hearing Shira for many years. Anyway, what did Shira do? Well, ultimately, she started to make changes to her business that she was uncomfortable with, but felt forced into, which is she reeled in the wackiness of the branding. And she also put aside so many of her creative, unique cookie ideas and started producing gluten-free Goody Girl versions of cookies that were already out there, very familiar cookies. And it was hard, especially for her and her daughter, who is literally on the packaging of the product.
It's been a process, and it's been a struggle because it's giving up a little bit of creativity. My daughter, who is on the front of the package, screams at me every night when I come home and tell her that we changed something. She's like, you're totally giving in. You're totally losing your creativity. It's like every other cookie now, you know? And I'm just like, well, I mean, that it's not selling.
And the changes saved the business. I mean, Goody Girl cookies, again, like I said, you can find it. You can find it all over the place. I see it all over the place. And it's because of these changes that she made. These changes that she thought would cause her business to lose its identity, in fact, enabled it to find its identity. And this story has stuck with me. I've shared this with so many people, even just friends, entrepreneurs who are struggling with changes in their own business. And I tell them the story of Goody Girl cookies. And so I'm happy to bring it back here. And I was thinking about it recently because I went through something like this with the show. So longtime listeners of this show will remember that every episode used to be more produced. Like it was me narrating throughout and you would just hear clips of the person who I was speaking to. And I had this crafted narrative. And I really took a lot of pride in that. And I thought of it as a differentiation in the marketplace, that it was the reason that people came to listen to this show was not just because of the good advice and the stories that I told, but the way that I told them and the production of it. I thought a lot about production. So I thought that everyone would think a lot about production. And then an interesting thing happened, which is that I ran out of time to do that. I mean, we're going back to early days of this show. I only had one kid at the time. Now I have two. And that kid was much younger and was napping a lot, especially on the weekends. And so I would spend oftentimes every weekend working on this show. I would write the script for this show, like on the couch while my baby son slept. And then I lost that time. I lost that time to so many things. I mean, the kids, well, then I had two kids and they grew up a little more. And now weekends are busier, but also just my life is busier. I'm doing way more things than I was back then. I've got two podcasts, this other one called Build for Tomorrow, as you might know. I'm working on a book, which I don't know if I've told you that. I'm working on a book. It'll come out in August of 22. A lot of speaking stuff. Anyway, there's just so much that I'm doing that I don't have that kind of time anymore. I needed to be able to produce this show that you're listening to right now in less time because sitting on the couch during nap time on the weekends was no longer an option. And I was afraid because I thought, you know, I'm going to make this change. Some of the production stuff is going to have to go. I used to sit down, I would write a script and I would cut all this audio. And some of that is going to have to go. And maybe people will leave me. And so I started doing some experiments. And the experiments were that I would take the sensibility of the show and I would produce a little bit in the beginning, but I would then the rest of the show I would run as a Q&A. An edited Q&A, I really believe in editing, believe in respecting people's time. So I wouldn't run everything. I would chop it down, but it took half the time maybe as producing a full show, right? Because now I'm talking to somebody, I'm having a controlled conversation with them, I'm selectively editing. It literally cuts in half the amount of time it takes to make this show. And I put it out into the world and I heard no complaints. And then very weirdly, whenever I would get reader or listener, I'm so used to saying reader because the magazine, listener email, a bunch of times when people would reference an episode that they liked, it would be one of those shows that I thought of as the lazy show, the show that I didn't spend nearly as much time working on, the conversation show, the show that was less differentiated as far as I was concerned in the marketplace. And I would think, what is going on? Why did you like that episode over the one that I spent literally twice the amount of time working on? And eventually I came to realize, you know, I think that the thing is, people aren't thinking about the creation of the show the way that I am. They're just thinking about what they get out of it. And they don't really care how it's made so long as it's valuable to them. And maybe the reason that they liked that show is because it gave a little more airtime to somebody to say some interesting thing, or we were able to dive into an idea in a way that I wouldn't have otherwise been able to do if I produced it. And maybe the thing that I thought was an asset, maybe was even partially a liability. I don't know. At the very least, I had the freedom to change it. And so I have. As you may know, I've experimented with the format of this show a lot. And now, even when I do something like a more produced show where you hear it's like me narrating, and I'm not writing the script for that anymore. I now literally just do it on the fly. I do it off the top of my head. I kind of clip things out. I just speak from one clip to the next. I was like, I have this person saying this. And then the next time I know they're going to say this thing over here and I have to create a bridge. So let me just talk. And the more I pushed myself to do that, the more comfortable I became with doing it on the fly. And now I have this show that people still really like and I still get great feedback on and hopefully you still enjoy, but it takes me so much less time to make it, which is time that I can now devote to all these other projects. And this has been a real lesson for me, as it was for Shira at Goody Girl, which is that just because we're doing things in one way and just because we have an idea of what it is that makes us special doesn't mean that our audience has that same experience or opinion. And we better know where the audience really is instead of just where we are. Because if we know where the audience is, we can serve them better, but also we can free ourselves up. We can find new ways of doing things. Just because we're doing thing one way doesn't mean that there aren't 20 better ways to do it. And we will only know that if we stop believing that our one idea happened to be the best idea. And instead, maybe we try new things. Maybe we treat our audience as genuine, opinionated consumers instead of just receivers of whatever we think is good. So that's the show now. And you'll hear more experimentation to come. I'm constantly pushing myself to find new ways to make this show, to do it in interesting and fun ways. You know, this episode that I'm doing right now, do you know why I'm doing this? It's because at episode 50, I thought, well, maybe I'll take a risk and I'll just talk directly to audience. And people loved it. I just got so much good feedback on it. And so then I did it at 100. I got more feedback. And so now here it is. Now I'm doing this and I'll continue to do it. Maybe you've noticed some episodes, I do a short episode where it's just me talking to you with no other interview subject or whatever. And the thing is, that's all to me an experiment. And it's a trust that I'm placing in you, the listener, to tell me what works for you and that you know better than I do. You just do. In the same way that cookie consumers knew better than Shira did. They're the ones buying the cookies after all. And so here we should be constantly pushing ourselves to try those new things and to see what change we really do need. All right, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I'm going to tell you a story about another change that I went through that I think also should have a lesson for us all and also explains why I walked out the door and went outside at the very beginning of this episode. Because outdoors plays a different role in my life, I mean, relatively speaking, than it did before. Okay, coming up after the break. I subscribe to a few websites, which of course means that I need to be logged in. And you know what just drives me crazy? It's when I go to the site I am paying for, and the site is like, who are you again? It makes me log back in. So annoying. And you know what this is? It is an identity problem. And it's the type of experience that Ping Identity makes awesome. Ping is the leader, the champion in global enterprise identity security. It ensures that the world's largest organizations can deliver secure, extraordinary digital experiences for their employees and customers around the world, which is really important for a whole bunch of reasons. Like, for example, in today's digital business world, you cannot have security slow you down. With Ping Identity, your business is secure and agile. Want employees to be productive rock stars? Well, with Ping Identity, you can help them securely access everything they need to get the job done without passwords, even on the road. And Ping makes sure your loyal customers have a good digital experience and keep coming back. To learn more about how Ping Identity can help you, go to pingidentity.com. Again, Ping, P-I-N-G, pingidentity.com. All right, we're back. So let me tell you one more story about the change we didn't think we needed that it turns out we needed. As you know, as maybe you know, as I've mentioned a couple times on this show, I have spent the last now almost year and a half, certainly will be soon enough, in Colorado. In normal times, I live in Brooklyn, New York, and I commuted to an office in Manhattan every day. And then the pandemic began, and my wife and I have two little kids, and we thought, is there another option than getting locked down in this very small apartment that we have with these two kids that bounce off the walls? And fortunately, you know, not everybody is this fortunate, I very well realize, but fortunately, my parents have a house in Colorado and were willing to take us in. And so we came out here with no idea of how long it would be. And it turned out to be, well, we're still here, but we're going to go back in August. So anyway, it's been more than a year. And for a very long time, I just buckled down. I did the work, which I always do. I mean, you know, I would, in normal times, would go to the office, and I would basically never leave the office unless there was a meeting or a quick run to get lunch. And that was about it. I really never took a break. And so here I am. Now I'm in Colorado. I'm in a very different environment. It's sort of suburban, but across the street, and it's just like open space. And there are mountains and there are trails, and everyone here is like biking and hiking all the time. And I wasn't. I was like, I don't know what you people are doing. I have work to do. And then one day I'm sitting out. The one thing I did do is that I started working outside. So as soon as it was nice out, I would sit and I'd sit in the front of the house with my laptop and I would work. And one day this guy, Jason, who lives across the street, who I've become friends with, in the middle of the day comes kind of wheeling by on a bicycle. And I'm like, where are you going? Don't you have work to do? Like, he's busy. I know he's busy. So he also, like me, doesn't live here in normal times. He lives in Florida, but he was out here renting a place. And he was like, well, I'm going to do work later. It's like the mountains are here. I'm going to go take a bike ride. The mountains are here and I can work later. And then off he went. And I thought, I got work to do now. I don't know about later. And I sat there and I kept working. And then I just felt myself sinking into this chair that I was in. And for a couple of days, I just felt like I was sinking into this chair. And then I decided, you know what? Maybe he's right. And so one day when I had like an hour to spare, I mean, I could have worked during that hour, but let's be honest, I either could have worked that other time or the things that I would have done that hour were just like not the most pressing things in the world. I got on a bike and I rode and I loved it. I just loved it. And then I tried to make it part of my routine. And I found that it was a de-stressor and it made me enjoy this environment more. And it helped contribute to this really fascinating experience that I've had, which is that I had for so long before I moved to New York. I moved to New York when I was 28. I'm 40 now. And when I moved to New York, I had spent many years prior wanting to live in New York. And then I got there and I was thrilled. And I said, I am never, ever leaving this place. This is everything that I want. It's right here. And I met my wife, who was from D.C., and if she hadn't met me, likely would have gone back to D.C. She really loves D.C., but I told her, I'm in New York. Like, if this is going to work, it's going to happen here. And she signed on for that, and so we've lived in New York ever since. And then I came out here, and for a long time, I was like, bah, this place. I mean, pretty mountains, yeah, but like, bah, it's not New York. People aren't New Yorkers. Vibe isn't New York. And then after a while, and especially this biking, I came to really like it here. I don't know that I'm going to live here. People always ask, are you going to move here? No, I don't think so. We're going to go back to New York now. But what I discovered about myself is that New York is not the only place that I can be. And that actually there are like benefits to other places and I can enjoy other places and I can enjoy other lifestyles. I mean, this like hard charging, never stop, go to the office in Manhattan, close the door, basically don't come out with the exception of like dashing across the street to get like a salad. That's one way to live, but it's not the only way. And it's not the only way that I can do it, in fact. And that's just been really valuable, regardless of what happens after this and where we end up. I mean, we're going to go back to New York. Will we stay there? I don't know. I mean, obviously, living in an apartment is going to, with two little boys, is going to be harder after having lived in a house with like space. Like my older son, 5 years old, just learned how to ride a bicycle. He's like riding around the neighborhood now. It's a lot harder to do that in Brooklyn. So I don't know. We'll figure it out. We don't know the answer. I can't tell you what the answer is now, but I do know that I learned something pretty valuable about myself from being forced into a change. And no matter what happens and no matter where I go afterwards, I think that that lesson is helpful. And so when I think back on what I've just shared, these two things about changing the podcast and then kind of this discovery of lifestyle, it really goes down to there is not one way to do something. And just because you like one way of doing something doesn't mean that you couldn't like another way and that other people couldn't like another way either, that you are going to deliver something to them or present something to them or give them something or whatever the case is. And this is good. This is good. We shouldn't be simplifying ourselves. We should be embracing the complexity, and we should be seeking that complexity. Because, you know, when we shrink things down to simplicity, we lose so much. And the world and we are just better, I think, if we realize that, you know, one way may work, another way may work better, or work just as well. Or who knows? Who knows? I guess that's the answer. Who knows? But we better continue to try. So that is it. That is the 200th episode of this podcast. What a crazy thing that I've been making this thing for so long. It's funny, you make something and then you make 50 of them and you're like, whew, I don't know how we're going to do any more of that. And then suddenly it's 200 and we'll keep going. There is no end in sight. I appreciate you. I appreciate you being a part of this journey so far and into the future. And well, I'll see you next week with episode 201. And then at 250, we will pause and we'll reflect some more. And we'll see where the hell I am, because I don't know where I'm going to be living. I guess probably, 50. Well, 50 is nearly a year away. I don't know. Whatever. I don't know. I shouldn't say I don't know, resigned. I don't know. Seems like a good thing. I don't know. Okay. Thanks.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to Problem Solvers wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Monday morning and you don't want to miss it. And hey, be kind. Pass the show along to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost. And did you solve a problem that would be good for this show? Let me know about it. Visit my website, jasonpfeiffer.com, JasonPfeiffer.com, where you can find my contact information and all sorts of other valuable info. Problem Solvers is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for all your entrepreneurship needs. And even better, subscribe to our magazine, which is just full of the smartest entrepreneurs solving the toughest problems. My name is Jason Pfeiffer, the editor-in-chief of Entrepreneur Magazine. Thanks for listening. And hey, let's go solve some problems.